Welcome to The Knowledge. The Knowledge, a Levitt Group podcast. Advanced knowledge for senior marketers. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of The Knowledge. I'm your host, Peter Domican. The Knowledge is a podcast of the Levitt Group, the sector interest group for senior marketers within the Chartered Institute of Marketing. To find out more about us, visit our website at www.levittgroup.org.uk or read the show notes for this podcast. Today I'm talking to Professor Cor Moulinar, who is Professor of E-Marketing and Distance Learning at Rotterdam School of Management, Erasmus University. And we're talking about his book, Why Customers Would Rather Have a Smartphone Than a Car, Relationship Retailing as an Opportunity, which is published by Gower. Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Okay, so Cor, could you, just to kick us off, could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your experience in e-marketing and retail?
I'm a professor in Rotterdam, the Rotterdam School of Management, Erasmus University. I spend on average one day a week on the university. I teach on two levels, bachelor's and master level, on the topic of e-marketing. I have a doctor's degree in the impact of information technology on marketing. So you can see I always look at two sides of the medal, marketing and information technology. I've got a background in database marketing, in direct marketing, in telemarketing, all to do with information technology in marketing. Since 1998, I run a consultancy bureau helping companies to use the technology on the most profitable way. And the last 6-7 years, mainly in retail, because my focus is on the changing customer behavior because of internet and technology. And if customers buy differently, the first one who will notice this is retail. Online retail, offline retail. And that is my major focus. Although it is slowly shifting also to the supply chain, because people buy just as easy in China as they buy in England or in Holland. So it is a very dynamic world at the moment.
This is your third book.
This is my 22nd book.
22nd book?
Yeah, the third book on retail. But before,
third book on retail.
I wrote on loyalty cards. I wrote books about marketing information systems, etc. But since 2009, I keep focusing more and more on retail and customer behavior. So The End of Shops is a book. And of course, my latest book, Why We'd Rather Have a Smartphone Than a Car.
How did you go about researching this book?
Because I'm also a consultant for companies, I can see the different behavior of customers into the shop. So I looked at customers. I talked with quite a few customers in research, partly by myself and partly with my students. I gave all assignments to my students for all kinds of desk research. Normally, I've got a student group of 50 in bachelor's and 50 in master's from all over the world. So I can use all the experiences from all the countries to see how customers act differently. I went twice to America for a study trip to Silicon Valley, and I talked to companies like Google and Facebook and Andreessen Horowitz. So I knew what was happening in America and what their view was on the future. And finally, of course, my customers, they are facing with a problem of the changing behavior of customers, the dropping of turnover and the increase of internet. And I got all kinds of challenges on what should we do. So what I did, I took the practical problems of every company, every major retailer. I looked at the customers and I looked at the development of technology. And that came to the book. And my focus is always starts with customers. We buy different, so you have to adapt. And one of my major findings was we make different choices as a customer. Different choices if we shop, where we shop, and how we spend our budget.
I think the book positions retail at an inflection point where the traditional models of retail are beginning to struggle across Europe and the US.
That's right. That's right. What I said in the book as well, it is the end of transaction-based profit. Retailers always used to, I buy articles, I sell it, I get my margin, and I'm happy.
What do you think the key challenges that retail marketers need to address?
The challenge for the retail is, of course, how can you still keep your turnover? The customers are on the couch to buy just as easy online as in your shop. How can I convince people to buy online from me or to buy online in my shop? If you cannot convince them, you lose turnover. The second is, are you able to find a new business model? Because we get a real price war on the moment. That means your margins are dropping. So you have to find all the resources to make profits. And the main case is, can we find a service? People are prepared to pay for it on top of transactions. So how can you keep your profit? And how can you keep your turnover? That is the major problem.
You divide the book into three parts: the world we want, the world we get, and how we learn from practice. Let's have a look at the first part, the world we want. So what do consumers want? And specifically, why would customers rather have a smartphone than a car?
To start with your last question, if you look at the development of the last 5 years, the first smartphone was 2007 with iPhone 1, but the major breakthrough came with iPhone 3 around 2010. We also called it a tablet in 2010. If you see now that an average adult person spends about 10% of their free disposable income on electronic products, that might be internet, it might be internet TV, it might be a smartphone, it might be apps, it's about 10% of your free disposable income. For young people, it's already 25%. They even find part-time jobs to pay for their smartphone. My prediction is that in a few years' time, we spend about a quarter of our free disposable income to smartphones and electronics. The major reason is we like to be connected. We really feel unhappy if we leave our smartphone at home because we feel lost in this world. Before, we had a very physical world. We saw friends, we went to the pub, we went to our job with people. And now we are more and more on ourselves, single households. We are more and more self-employed. So we need this communication. And communication is a basic need of our human beings. So when we do have a choice, are we going for the smartphone with our money or from a car? We pick the smartphone because we can always lend a car, we can hire a car. We see a future with self-driving cars, so we pay per mileage. So we make our car expenses flexible so we get more money to spend on our smartphone. Also, the move from Tesco to Lidl, or to Aldi, or to other low-price shops, Primark, is also a move. We like to get more budget free to spend on our smartphone because our smartphone is seen now as our daily need. And I think that is our challenge. How can we still interact with each other? How can we belong somewhere? And how can we tell people who we are and where we are? And that means we make a different choice in our budget expenditure.
Technology is impacting our lives hugely. What else has changed in consumer needs compared to, say, 10 years ago before the financial crisis?
Oh, quite a few things. The first, of course, is do you still want a partner? If you see now that on average about 40% of the households are single households, and you see that also relationships are shorter on the moment. And before, let's say 10, 20 years ago, it's quite normal to live as a partner. And that means you could share costs, you could share responsibilities, and now you have to do it all by yourself. The second thing is, if you look at the young generation, they don't want to own things, they want to use things. So those people don't have to own a car or a house or are saving for a pension scheme. They live much more by today. They want to use these things, but they don't have to own it. In the older generations, the baby boom, the X or the Y generation, we always want to have our own house, we want to have our own boat, we want to have our car. That doesn't exist anymore. If you look at the younger generation as well, they are much more looking for their own needs and their own wishes. What we did in the past, we are a certain target group. We did the same with our friends or our neighbors or whatever. We adapted ourselves to the target group you want to be part of. And now people, you say, I live the life I like to live. And I don't want to work for 10 years in a company. I don't want to work for the boss. I want to work for 9 months and go on backpacking to Asia or whatever. So to make an other choice between free time and let's say working time. Also privately, they want to have excitement, they want to have a conversation of a rational world, what we see. So we still go to a football stadium because of the excitement of a football stadium. Or we go on holiday for the experience. So there are major different changes, more individual, more moment-driven, not so loyal as in the past. Everybody turns to themselves to make free choices, and technology is completely part of our life and takes up a major part of our budget.
Are those differences by country or are they a universal thing now?
Yes, they are universal. But of course, in Asia, it is a bit different than in Russia. But if you look at the Western world, in England, in Germany, or in Belgium, or in Holland, or in France, or in Spain, they're more or less all the same. All the same.
So the technology disruptions, do you think that's a fast evolution or is it actually a genuine revolution?
Oh, it is very fast. It is very fast. I was seeing our companies who were very profitable 2 or 3 years ago and now they go bankrupt. What we notice now that the world is changing because of technology, because of platforms on the internet, because of drones, of self-driving cars, etc. And what you see is that it will disrupt all business processes and supply chains. But as a company director, you still have your responsibility to the shareholders. You still have to show profits. So the first thing you do when you see all these changes, you start to reduce your cost. But reducing your cost is not changing towards the market. So they stick too long to old principles. And then you can see new young companies with no history, with young people, with a different view, all of a sudden to take over the world. I think the most strongest point is the telecom industry. Before we paid for our subscription, we paid for our short messages, and all of a sudden, you know, there are new applications and we don't pay anymore. You look at the software industry. Before we bought software or we bought a license for software and we paid a bit big money for it, and now we're in the cloud and we pay a subscription. But if your whole business model is based on a license, then you have a real problem to tell you to the shareholders now, okay, we take a big loss because we are out changing our business model to a subscription model. And quite conservative companies cannot make this change over, so they're out of business.
We'll discuss that as we move on into the next section. But one of the things I just wanted to ask you for in this first section is you talk a lot about payment systems. Could you tell us about some of the developments in this area and particularly tell us about Alibaba, which I think is relatively new to a lot of UK listeners, but potentially a big player in Europe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Alibaba is such a fascinating company. The first thing is they don't own anything. They don't have stocks. They don't have warehouses. They do everything centrally. They're just a middleman between producer and consumer. So what I do, I go to one of the websites of Alibaba. I go most of the time to AliExpress.com. I look at articles, and those articles are all offerings from the producers. So I pick an article. Alibaba will send my order to the producer. They collect the money and they keep the money until I say I'm happy about the article. The producer makes the article. It comes to me. I can all follow it to tracking and tracing. I receive it, including always all the transport cost. I'm happy, and Alibaba asks me, are you happy? I say yes, so to pay the money to the factory. If I say no, then I have to return my article and to pay the money back to me. So it's a major shift of responsibility, because before, if you were not happy about your article, you have to go back to the shop, you have to complain, and you have to see if you get your money back. And you were always, as a consumer, the one who did things wrong. And now, of course, the company has to show that it had quality controls, that they were right, and because now the company is responsible for the right article. Alibaba keeps the money for more security for the consumer. But they don't own anything. Like Amazon has got stocks and they've got warehouses and they've got responsibility. Alibaba is just a middleman. They have got a profit of 58%. Amazon has got 5%. So you can see it's a really profitable model. They connect direct a company with a consumer, so you don't have all the added cost of a supply chain. And that's why I think it's just a fascinating model that they're using. And I can see it now, that this kind of business models are being copied by a lot of other companies, like an Uber or like an Airbnb and more companies.
Moving on into the next section, which is about the world we get. And we get into a world that's currently facing the challenges of the future. Let's talk about some of the key threats to existing shops. The first one that you mention in the book is web shops. What are the changes that are happening there, and how does that threaten existing suppliers?
For a start, of course, you've got transparency. If you go to look for an article, you always check also on price, and your intention is normally to buy by the best deal. There might be the lowest price or the fastest delivery. The second thing is the articles are brought home. And in the shop, you have to go to the shop, you have to pick it up, you have to take it home with all kinds of fuss and bother which customers don't want. The third is the moment that you buy by a shop, you have to buy at opening hours. You have to go there. And shops close normally somewhere between 6 and 8 o'clock. I can see now in the Western world that the major shopping time is between 9 and 11 o'clock in the evening. That are times that the shops are closed. You are at home. You look in your computer or your tablet or your smartphone, and you're going to shop on a time that other shops are closed. So there's an obvious challenge what they're going to do with it. If I look at retailing companies, they don't have the knowledge and the skills which are needed for internet, because it's a completely different world. And the other thing is, even if they try to develop a dual channel strategy, if you get 90% of your turnover from your shop and only 10% from the internet, your focus is always more on your shop than on internet. And then you can see the frustration of people in those companies who are responsible for internet, that they don't get the budgets and the room or the constraints to make this a success. And that is a major challenge for big retailers, all of them. That, yeah, internet is nice, but it is facilitating the shop sales. But all the pure players on internet who only have a web shop, they are much more focused on making this a success. And now you can see that the turnover of sales on internet is growing still with about 15-20% a year. In most markets, in the non-food retail, and I talk mainly about electronics, about toys, about fashion, shoes, is about 20% of the total retail sales. And those 20% is taken away from the shops. That's point one. And point two, it is a pressure on margins, because the margins are lower on the internet because they have less costs. And that means that the shops have to go down in the price as well. So they're squeezed from two ways because of internet.
The pressure on price, you go into a lot of shopping malls these days and there's 60% off, 70% off, 40% off. Is that still working for retailers, or do they need to rethink that model?
They have to rethink the model. Because if you only get focused on price, then your message to the public is, we don't have any added value on top of internet. Otherwise, you would do something else. If a person is prepared to get in the car, to pay parking fees, to go to the shop, then in that case, the customer will see an advantage and added value to go to these shops. But if they only focus on price, then they just say, we don't have any added value and we are just rational. But if they're able to make it more pleasant to go to the shops, to have much better services, to make people feel happy, then we are prepared to pay a better price for it. But if you go down in price, you can spend less on the nice things of shops. So we are just a price competitor against internet. If you see discount of 60 or 70%, it just means the old model is not working anymore. You give away all your profit. You still want some cash flow. You need cash flow to buy new stocks. And so you sell the articles for your buying price. So basically, it is the road down to nothing. I mean, you go bankrupt sooner or later.
Who do you think are responding to these challenges very well in retail?
Department stores, look at John Lewis. I try to follow them. They do it great. You still go to Harrods. They do it great. You still go to Selfridges. They do it great because they are focusing on the fun of shopping. One of my major showcases is also Burberry in London, Regent Street, where they really try to integrate technology into the shopping experience on a modern way. And they work with smell, they work with sound, to work with videos in the shop. So it is a shopping experience by stimulating our senses. And I think that is what we want. On the internet, it is rational shopping, because you cannot really trigger your senses. But in a physical environment, you want to trigger your senses. You want to feel happy. Hedonic is the word for it. You want to feel happy. And shops who are going to integrate this, and I told you the shops, they are going to be successful, because that's what we like. And if you see over the whole world, they go to Harrods to do the shopping, and they can also buy it online, then you have to ask yourself, why don't they do it? And that is the shopping experience, the feeling which should go back into retailing. The second thing, we don't go to a shop anymore. We go to a shopping area. We go to a shopping mall or whatever, because there are a lot of shops and it's free. And we got a pub in there, we got cinemas in there. So it is a whole way of living. So a shopkeeper should realize that we don't go specially to his shop, but we go to the town center or we go to the shopping center. So it should work much closer together with each other to attract people to come to the shopping center and then to also come to your shop. And if you don't do this, everybody stays individual. You will never be a successful team.
So how does that then affect supermarkets, which have been very much kind of the destination shop to get your food and more other things as time went on?
Food is different from non-food. So the things I told you up to now is mainly focused on non-food. What is happening with supermarkets is that they are in a real price battle, of course, rational. But at the same time, I still see in smaller communities that all the shops are calm, except the supermarket. So what you see, the supermarket is still a social place to go to, because you can still see your neighbors and your friends. So that point will stay there, especially in smaller communities. I see that in larger areas, food shopping is going to be rational. And then you see, of course, all the Germans, Aldi and Lidl, taking part in this world. And you can also see niche shopping, where you try to attract or the single households or the people who are working, both of them, you know, full time, no spare time, so they want to have it delivered at home. Or you see people who go more for fresh, they want the whole fresh boxes every 2 or 3 days, so they don't have to think about a meal. So the major developments in food is rational shopping is on price, local communities is on social connections, and you see the development of niche products like the fresh food, of like the top of the market or experience into supermarkets. So the whole landscape is changing in small segments.
Let's talk a little bit more about shopping centres. Now, that just doesn't have an impact on retailers, but on us as part of the towns and cities in which we live. Could you talk us through some of the issues we're facing there?
Well, I think England is an example of how not to do it. You build big shopping centers out of the town center, and actually you're killing the town centers. I used to study in Manchester, and I still remember on Manchester on Saturday on Market Street, it was really, really packed full of people. I went to Manchester as part of my research a few years ago. And I went to the town center again. And it was completely dead and empty. And they haven't invested in the shops anymore. So it was a dreadful place to be. So I asked people, you know, where are the shoppers here? Yeah, you know, to all go to Trafford Center. And I went to Trafford Center on Sunday. And it was really packed full. People were there, you know, to enjoy themselves. There was a restaurant with, I think, 2,000 places. So everybody had a lunch there. And I think by myself, okay, council, you should have a vision. If you build a shopping center outside the town, what's going to happen with your town center? What do you want to happen with your town center? Do you still want shops in your town center? Or only culture? Or only entertainment? And what I see, if it happened in England, and I see it exactly the same happening now in Belgium and in France and in Holland and in Germany. Yes, 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 we like a town a shopping center outside the town, and they don't have a vision what the impact will be on the town center itself. And that's wrong, because a town center, especially in historical built town center, people like it. They would like to go there for the culture, for the entertainment, for some shops. So I think that shopping centers will have a big influence on town centers, and town centers will be much smaller than they are now, but they will always be focused around an historic point. It might be a church, it might be a pond, it might be old buildings, whatever. We get much more boutiques in town centers. We get much more mum and dad shops again. This is a certain article. We get more pubs, more entertainment and culture. Parks maybe. That is the future of a town center, still to attract people. And shops will be out of the town center in big shopping centers. And there are the major big shops. And you need to develop a vision, and you have to work on it. Otherwise, you get exactly the problem what England has now. What are we going to do with the center? And they spend, you can have all ideas what you have done in England and try to revitalize maybe a street or a shop or whatever. But there's not a consistent view on the future.
Do retail outlets have a place in the town center?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. A retail outlet is the image, it is cheap. And if you it's cheap, then you attract people who has got not so much money to spend. That's why they go to an outlet center. I much rather see in a town center the small boutiques, the specialist shops, shops you like to go shopping for. Articles which you don't buy so quick on the internet, but you are always surprised to find those in the shop. Outlet centers, I think, is more outside. But I told you to attract people with a low budget, and around there will be also shops with a low budget, which is a totally different type of customers.
Let's talk about small retailers. They obviously don't have the money to invest in technology and keep up with this revolution that's going on. What can they do to survive and thrive?
For a start, it's very difficult. I think as far as I can do, they can do three things. Or close the shop and you say, okay, I cannot beat internet and I cannot beat the big boys. Second is focus much more on your customers. Communicate much better with your customers. So the customers like to do business with you because you help them, you support them, they like you, they go to you. And the third is try to get a product offering which is not so normal to buy it on internet or to go to the big stores, because products need more services, or products need more help buying it, or they just custom-made products, or products made in the premises. I can give you one example. In America, I went to a shop, and if you bought a bike, the bike was made in the shop. You could just pick all your parts, and you could sit there, you could see your bike made, and people spent an hour waiting for the bike made. They just want to see this. Although you can also buy a bike on internet, and you can have ready-made and shipped at home. This shop was really busy. So they were trying to get some manual work to it, to advise, you can interact with it and have a product which is quite difficult to sell to the internet. I think that is the future for the shops. If you look at the buying behavior, if you buy on internet, you always have to wait for your articles. They are never there straight away. If you go to the big shops, you always have to go to a big shopping center. So there's also an opportunity for local businesses which can help and support the local community. And that means that those people should be well known in the community, they should be liked in the community, they should be active, they should communicate. So they need different skills for the future than they needed for the past.
One of the things that retail companies have spent a lot of time and money on over the years is loyalty.
Yeah, the first thing is there is not such a thing as loyalty. The only loyalty I can see is from dogs and not from people. We in Europe have made a mistake. In America, they call it frequency cards and not loyalty cards. So we said a frequency card is a loyalty card. And loyalty means that you prefer to buy by a certain shop. And loyalty is a two-way process. If I'm loyal to you, I expect you to be loyal to me. But frequency is, if I buy a lot of me, you're happy, so you give me a small present. The loyalty cards I've seen in the past are all frequency cards. They have to buy a lot. A company is never loyal to the customers. They don't open the shop and I want to shop. They don't offer the products I like to offer. I'm a runner. I need a certain type of shoes. I'm happy with it. If I buy the new shoes a year later, they said, no, we don't have the brand anymore. We have a new brand. I said, yes, but I like my old type. Yes, they don't make it anymore. So they just are not loyal. So I think in the future, loyalty is different. We have to analyze our behavior, and now we communicate. You can build loyalty with communication, with personalized communication. If they just tell to you, you buy every year a suit, I just been to Italy, I got a new collection of suits, also your size, I put one apart for you, whenever you feel like it, come to my shop and I got some articles especially for you. Now you can feel already more of a loyalty. If they would say to you, okay, you're male, you spent on average, let's say, £1,000 on your clothes, why don't you pay me just £1,000 and pick the clothes whenever you feel like it? Sometimes you buy more, sometimes you buy less. I said also want a hairdresser, I come there every month, why don't you charge me £400 and I can come how often I want? And they said, yes, but can you come every week here? I said, yes, but maybe I go on holidays and I don't come for 3 months. I mean, this kind of loyalty is always you give something and you get something back. And I think that should be the principle for shops as well. Be loyal, communicate, look at my interest, what I really want. And I don't want discounts, I don't want free gifts, I just want the good product at the moment I want it. So I think this is a change of mind from a supply-driven approach to a demand-driven approach.
We're coming up to the end of our time today, Cor. It's been really interesting to talk to you today. Where can people find out more and get hold of you?
Of course, I've got my own website, www.cormolenaar.nl. I could also an English section to it. I'm of course on Twitter. I've got an English account. It's called Disrupt Retail. LinkedIn, of course, you can find me on all social media, or just call me. It's also possible.
Okay, and we'll put all that in the show notes along with all the details of the book. Thanks ever so much for being on the podcast, Cor. It's been great to talk to you.
Okay, Peter, thank you.
So that was my interview with Professor Cor Molenaar talking about his book, Why Customers Would Rather Have a Smartphone Than a Car, which is published by Gower, and all the details are in the show notes. So that's it for this episode of The Knowledge. I hope you've enjoyed it. Until next time, goodbye.